Accession number 17628. Mr. Joseph Clark, reel 17.
Mr. Clark, reel 17. You left Baghdad, Mr. Clark. Where did you go to then?
I think we went to Kirkuk. Big oil station there.
You'd be in the middle of the oil fields now, were you?
We were, yes. And we stayed there a few days. We were in tents. A lot of bivouacs was pitched there and all. We stayed there a few days, Kirkuk, before we moved further on. And from there, I can remember some of the battalion start to march as though it was part of a scheme or something. And they marched till we came to our next place where we stopped. And it was somewhere near the Great Zab River. And we was pitched tents there. We were living in tents. And the weather was only poor then, mind.
Have you been to the winter?
Well, yes. Because I can remember we had our Christmas dinner up there on near the Great Zab River. And what had happened there before that, there'd been some trouble in Iraq. The leader of the, didn't know whether they were rebels, Rashid Ali. And there were some bridges blown. And the Royal Engineers was building or rebuilding this bridge across the Zab. It was, it wasn't quite finished when we got there, but there was a ferry. You could only get one truck on it at a time. To take across if anybody had to go across the river.
What was the battalion doing there?
Mostly digging in and sort of being prepared, I would say. We were a few miles from Mosul. I think that was the nearest place, Mosul. In fact, that was where if anybody had to go to hospital, I think that was the nearest place, Mosul.
Can you tell me your memories of actually the living conditions which you were under? As I say, you were in tents, and of course winter was coming in.
Yes, and we were in sleet and snow, living in the tents all around. I remember a lot of the officers used to have gumboots on, but it was bad in the, with the snow and the sleet, rain. It really was poor.
Were you still with headquarters company?
I was still with headquarters company then. But I can remember crossing the road. I used to go and see a friend of mine in A company. They weren't very far away. And I can remember one time going to his tent. There were one of these. I think there was about 8 men at either side. About 16 men in the tent. And they had a job to keep the water out on the hillside. Some of them was on the hillside. Even though they dug around a trench around the tents, there was still water getting in. It was really bad, that. And when we had our Christmas dinner up there, one thing, the officers still waited on us, like they always do in the army. And when we got I'm talking about headquarters where I was at then, we went and got our Christmas dinner. Can't tell you what it was. But the officers still served us, and we went and sat in the trucks on account of the weather, and we ate it in some of the troop carriers.
What were your own sleeping situations?
Sometimes I was sleeping in the truck and sometimes in the tent. It all depends if you had to turn out, you know.
Were you still with the medical officer?
Yes. We were still attached to him, yes. Yes.
Was there a lot of sickness amongst the battalion?
Strangely enough, you know, there wasn't a lot. Not in comparison to the weather. No, no, there wasn't a lot.
How did you keep warm?
We still had our sleep in the tent. We still had our blankets, you know. We still had blankets. We used to sleep with our clothes on.
Any form of heating? You were running out of oil. A lot of at least crude oil around you.
No.
You didn't utilise that in any way?
No. The only ones that used that was the cookhouse. They had one of those trench fires, you know, that they had a, what do you call it, like a sort of a pump that you pumped air in and kept the blaze going along the channel. And somebody came up with an idea I thought was pretty good. They used some angle irons, what they used to use, and they set them up so that there was, so there was drips of oil going in and water, and when the two met, they went along to help to keep this heating going for the cooks. I thought that was a good idea.
What was the quality of the food that you were getting?
Well, it was about the same as we'd always had. We used to get hardtack and all. It was about the same. You got used to stew, though, and rice. You know?
What, do you recall any of your own particular duties while you were there?
Well, I remember we were digging a trench one time, and it was like a bit of a mound, a hillock. And as they were digging the trenches, they came across a skeleton. Don't know what it was all about. They came across a skeleton, so somebody must have been buried there or at some time or other. But where we were, it was Iraq to us, but since then I've learned that's what they call Kurdistan now. I remember going as an escort with the MO, and he took a Iraqi interpreter with him, and this Jack Holt, the driver, and me. And he went to buy stuff. I think he was officer mess caterer, I think. And strangely enough, we went into a place called Erbil, which has been on the television lately. I sometimes think they pronounce it wrong, like, but I might be wrong. On the television, it's Erbil, but to us, it was always Erbil. But I went in there with the MO, and more or less as an escort. But that time, still carried a rifle. And the driver, he had his rifle as well. But we didn't have any bother.
Did you get much opportunity to meet with the Kurds, I think, of that area?
No. I had no connection with them, apart from this interpreter. None at all. There was no houses. It was out in the open. No, there was no houses. You used to see a lot of these camel trains coming along, you know, herdsmen with the camels and a lot of sheep.
And I believe you're on a major track for these nomadic people moving through.
Mm. Of course, there was a tarmac road there running through the camp where we were till we got to the Zab. And then if you had to go over, eventually the engineers finished this bridge, which had been blown by Rashid Ali's men, apparently. And I think I can remember they had a plaque put up, the engineers that rebuilt it. It was only, I think it wasn't a wide bridge. It was more a bridge to get transport across.
Was the battalion doing any training as well as digging? Were they doing any manoeuvres or?
Well,
schemes?
Different companies. We didn't see them a lot. All you know, we used to go out to the different companies, but there was a lot of training going on. Oh yes.
What was your daily task?
They still had the sick parades, and we used to come around from our truck. And in the tent, the MOE, they used to still take the sick parade. He was very strict on the latrines, our MOE. It was one of these type of, where they dug a trench. Oh, deep, let's say 6 foot, maybe longer. Longer than that. And the Pioneer Corps, they had built like a wooden frame and had seats so that the wooden frame covered the trench. And it was out in the open. Well, it was out in the open. Sometimes they did put Hessian around, you know, as a bit of a cover. But I can remember one time the MO going down there to inspect it, and somebody had reported that there was seen traces of blood, you know, from somebody in the excreta. And he went down and he started to make inquiries, see if anybody, because of course they could have had dysentery. That was one thing I can remember distinctly. He was a good MO.
And nothing came of that?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. We did have one lad, he went into Mosul, to the hospital. But I don't know what the MO say. There was still a lot of privacy, you know.
Did you have toilet paper issued for the latrine?
Well, you could say yes and no sort of style. I would say not toilet rolls like we've got today. No. Use what you could.
It must have been bitterly cold in the winter, having to go to the latrines.
Yeah, and sometimes the latrines was more or less on the perimeter sort of style, you know. Out, not in the area of the camp, more or less on the perimeter. I can remember some lads, you know, the green gas capes we used to have, seen it snowing, and used to have an entrenching tool, little shovel. You see them make a dive there, and they were way out of the way, and there they were. That was their latrine.
Just digging,
digging a hole with the snow coming down, had the gas cap over the top. It was serious, but it was laughable at the time.
And you say most of you were in tents, of course. It was a boring time. Was it difficult to fill your time in?
Well, you could say a lot was done sitting talking at night time, especially. You were always prepared to be called out, though. We were called out. This lad from Chester, he came with a King Shropshire Light Infantry, Charlie Bird. Him and me often got, maybe an orderly corporal would come up to our tent, you know. Well, I was still a corporal then. And used to go down to see, you know, maybe say somebody taken bad or something, or there's something wrong with him. Maybe go down and see him, and if we thought it was serious enough for a doctor, we had to go to the doctor's tent and call him out. He was sleeping in a tent on his own, not very far from us, but within the area. And we had to, and then of course he had to turn out in the wind and snow and all. And that happened a few times, but not a lot, not a lot.
Did you carry basic medicines with you at this time?
We didn't.
You still
just
didn't have
first aid kit. The doctor had the. We didn't have. No, no.
And was the first aid kit the usual bandages?
Just the usual things, shell dressings and what have you, you know. Just the normal thing you would use for first aid. But when there was an, you see, when there was a sick parade, if anybody wanted bandages out like that, well, we used to do it there and then. But if it was something serious, of course, the doctor did.
Was there any leisure activities? Was sport taking place?
No. No. I can remember once there was supposed to be a, like one of these ENSA concerts, but I don't know whereabouts that was held, but there was only so many allowed to go from each battalion. I never got.
Did you ever get into Mosul for a day as
no,
a leave
no,
or a break?
No, none of that. Not up in Iraq. No. Unless there was any company sent a truck in for some reason or other. The trucks, I don't know where the trucks brought the group from. But it used to come up through through the battalion headquarters to companies, you know.
You said the food was basic. What was the water situation?
Now, if my memory's right, we used to get the water from the Zab. And that was marked off, that river, for so long. Running from upstream, starting from upstream, the drinking water was first out of the river. And of course, the water trucks used to get it, and they chlorinated it, of course. I think these trucks used to carry about 200 gallons, something like that. But they got the water from the Zab. And when you move further downstream, I don't know what order they were in, but I think there was drinking water for animals, if there was animals. Next. Or was it? Aye. And then there was water for washing. You could get water out of there for washing, but it was done more or less in stages. And I think the last lot that was marked off, I think if they needed the vehicles washing, I think they used it like that. But the drinking water was always first, because it had to be chlorinated.
Was it a clean river, the Zab?
Well, it wasn't, yeah, it wasn't too bad. I think there was two rivers, you know, but I can only remember the Great Zab. They weren't great wide rivers, because they had this ferry where it was, you could only get one truck on it. It was more like a, what would you say, a raft type of thing, a big raft. And it was secured. Upstream, there was some connection somewhere upstream with the rope, it would be a wire rope, I should imagine, that was fastened to that ferry to stop it from being washed downstream. And I don't know whether there was a winch winching it over, or there might have been a winch at one side to winch it over, you know. But that rope came from upstream. It might have been fastened to something where this bridge was. That had been destroyed, you know, and they rebuilt it. But there was a rope there. I went across it once or twice with a truck. We had to take a truck across for some reason or other. And I think the company across there was B Company. But I remember later on we had an officer, Captain Robinson, and he had a. He'd set up a special, what you wouldn't call it a platoon. It wasn't as big as a platoon. It was a big section. I forget what they called it now. But there, he was a good officer. But these lads were more or less like, based on specialist training. And I can remember he had them, and they had to cross this river with a full kit. And he went first. He was leader by example, him. He was a good officer. John Robinson, they called him. Of course, the lads had a name for him. They called him Mad Robo. But he was a good officer. He was down to earth, I think, that fella. But he did, I remember him, he did, they did practice there maybe more than once, but they went across that river with the equipment on.
Something like a battle section, a battle unit.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes, he was good, him. They were hand-picked men, volunteers mostly, like, but hand-picked.
Was mail and parcels coming through to you?
We still got mail, yes, yeah. Yeah, still got the mail up in Iraq. I can remember sitting reading them. And sometimes, you know, after you'd had them a while, a day or so, and that, well, if you had too many letters, I know sometimes lads used to destroy them. But they did, you know, they would keep the ones they wanted to keep. Oh, we got letters. I used to number my letters so that I knew if there was one missing. I used to number them.
Did any parcels come through from home at the time you were there?
Not up in Iraq.
But you weren't there that long.
No, we would be there from, I would think, sometime in the November. Because I always remember distinctly we were there for Christmas. And it was some very strong winds, mind, up there. It wasn't a nice place at all, Iraq. In fact, this interpreter went to Erbil with the MO and Jack Holt and me. They gave him an army uniform, and he had a top coat, and they gave him three stripes on it. So I suppose that was to give him a bit of authority somewhere along the line. But I remember that made him a sergeant. Who did that? Well, it's out of my line, that.
Was he one of the Kurds or one of the Iraqis?
Well, I wouldn't know. I always thought they were Iraqis.
Important to get mail, well, it always was, but was. In a position like that.
It was.
Where you were really basically cut off from so much.
You were, really, they used to say, you know, they'd taken us up there after we left Cyprus as a, more or less a holding division, I suppose. They used to say, The enemy might come through the Caucasus. Of course, we didn't know a lot about what was going on, you know. But that's what they were. That was the saying. They used to say, "Well, if they come through the Caucasus, then we are here."
Over the weeks that you were there and the conditions that you were living and working under, did morale drop a little bit? Were people grumbling a great deal?
Well, you did, Gerard, but. Of course, there was nothing you could do about it. You were out of the way, you know. But the division would be all scattered around that area. I can remember the brigade major. He used to come around the companies and the battalion, you know. Of course, Colonel Percy was the colonel. And Major Slight was second in command.
Have you any other memories of Iraq, being up on the top there, before you set off to come back? You get involved in hunting animals. I think that was part of the activities.
I did hear that some of the officers did, you know, maybe have a deer we used to hunt. Well, I'm saying hunt. Gazelle. I think it was gazelle that was up there at the time. But I never saw it, but I heard of it.
So essentially you were still doing the MO, or helping the MO?
We were still his assistant, helping him out with movement and what have you.
What time would your day start?
Oh, 6, Rivali. Oh, 6 o'clock.
Was that by bugle?
No, I can't remember the bugler being up there then. But I can remember they used to put a battalion guard on for battalion headquarters. And of course they were taken from different companies each time, you know. And the RSM then wasn't very popular. It was RSM Jimmy Kemp. The strange thing was, when we were in France in 1940, he was one of our sergeants in A Company. Then he was made a sergeant major, and he was decorated in France. He got the DCM. And, of course, now at this particular time in Iraq, he was RSM. And he was one of these that used to have the drums, you know. He used to mount guard with the drums. No words of command sort of style. That was the type of man he was. He'd been a regular soldier, I believe. But he was the RSM, but he wasn't very popular, I might say.
In what other ways was he unpopular?
Well, I don't know. He never mixed with the men, you know. He was a one-off him.
Was the standard of turnout still kept as high as it was possible?
Oh, yes, especially when you were on guard or anything. Oh, yes. Oh, aye.
But one of the problems, you said, was to keep dry in the winter.
It was. There was, you had, there was the sleet and snow around, definitely around Christmas time, definitely.
Were the tents just parked on top of the ground, or were they dug into a depth?
No, they were pitched on the ground, and there was trenches dug around them for when the water ran off, so it would run away.
Was there a stand too every morning and evening?
Well, I don't know so much about the companies. As I say, sometimes you pick for guard, and then there was pickets put on to walk around the tented area, you know. There was always something on the go. But, having a colonel like Colonel Percy, he was a strict man. He was. The lads used to call him Joss. That was his name, Joss Percy.
Did you say strict? Was he light, in spite of his strictness?
Well, he wasn't too bad. But you never saw a lot of him. We never saw a lot of him at all. Apart from when he was walking around the area, you might see him sometimes where visiting, I suppose he would be, with the second in command, Major Slight.
Did you see more of him, second in command?
Major Slight was a decent fella, him. When I say decent, I mean he was a man that knew his men, I think. He was a good fella, him, Slight. I think eventually, later on, he became the colonel, I think. I'm nearly sure he was made lieutenant colonel. But he would stop and speak to men. Maybe it's past the time of day. Oh, he was a good name.
And you still had the same doctor that you had in...
There's only once we didn't have him. He went away when we were there. He came one day and he said, "I'm going away for 2 weeks." I thought, oh dear. He says, "But there's another MO coming up from the 149. That was the field ambulance, which was based somewhere around, I don't know where. And Captain McKenna went off. I don't know what he went for. Of course, we didn't know that. He was probably going to some sort of course, I suppose, or..." And the doctor that came was a Captain Anderson. I think that was right. Anderson. But he wasn't as free with the men as Captain McKenna.